Hello, Devlin here with you, and welcome to another edition of Mondo Nostalgia Radio. Hope you're keeping well during these crazy times, and as promised, my next podcast is here. And although on the last podcast I talked about nothing about the situation we're going through, that's all I talked about. I promised that I was going to bring you a nice light one and entertaining one, and that's exactly what I have. And I've got a lot to talk about, so we're not going to waste any time. This is a look at my personal greatest movies of all time. This is my top 50, in fact, my top 50 favorite movies of all time. A couple years back, a friend of mine, Damien Troutman, asked me to make this list, and I told him it's almost impossible. But after figuring out logistics and knowing that, well, from year to year, movies are going to go up and down, I decided why not give it a shot. So we both did it, and I had a list. And I'm pretty happy with this list. Now, we did this project in, I believe, 2016. So I had to modify it because there has been 4 years since then. And four movies in the last 4 years were awesome enough to crack my top 50. So I had to say goodbye. So this is right up to date. Right up to date. Since I've only seen two movies in 2020, don't look for either of those in there. But this is right up till the end of 2019. Now, before I get right into this list, because this is a big list to tackle in a short time, and I hope you're interested in enough to play it. Maybe even go out and check out some of the movies you haven't seen. But let's get some discrepancies out of the way. This is my list. Some of these movies are considered cinematic classics. Others are cult classics. And some of them are downright people do not like these movies. But they are on my list. So you can always comment. I always like a nice discussion and tell me what you think of my list, but don't trash me too hard. These are movies that mean something to me. My criteria for picking these movies go like this. The movie had to have entertained me. There's usually something visually or something that captured in this movie as well, as in, you know, I like how it looked, I liked how it feel. I also, did the movie inspire me? A lot of these movies inspired me in different ways and shaped my life. And, you know, you might look at a movie and say, that movie was crap. But for me, it might actually have been a movie that altered my life. But right down to the last of it, is it pretty much had to be a movie that touched my heart. And all these movies have in varying degrees. I've also shuffled them around to make sure I get all the kinds of movies I love in this, because, you know, sometimes if you go down your favorites, it's just action or maybe just musicals or comedy, depending on who you are. But I like a variety of movies, so I did a system where I made sure it was all blended. Without further ado, let's take a look at my top 50 movies of all time. Coming in at number 50 is Alien from 1979, directed by Ridley Scott and starring Sigourney Weaver, Tom Skerritt, John Hurt, and Veronica Cartwright. Yeah, I was a little kid when this came out, so I probably did not see it in theaters, but I do remember the trailer scaring the crap out of me. Yeah, I was at the drive-in and they showed the trailer, and I don't know what it was about. But it just terrified me. And even that poster with the egg cracking with the green coming out just absolutely blew my mind. When I actually went to see the movie or finally got to see it, I've since seen it on the big screen, but not when I was a kid. I actually love this movie. And as you see, it tackled my top 50. I know some people say Aliens is better, but not for me. I think Alien is an awesome horror film. It's a psychological horror film. It really catches you that way, and I think it still stands up today. Coming in at number 49 is The Breakfast Club, 1985. Director John Hughes, stars Emilio Estevez, Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald, and Ally Sheedy. Again, this movie came out right at the right time. I was a teenager when this came out, and I was probably just getting ready to leave high school. And this movie still works today. Maybe not as powerful, but the cliques that this represents, the five kids who go into detention, they're still out there. They might be in a different form, and like some things may have changed. Like the nerdy guy now isn't quite as nerdy because, there's a lot of guys like that and it's respected now. And, the rebel guy is more of a bully now. But the emotions in this movie are still what make it. And for me, the 80s fashions and music help out because this is when I went to school, so it's perfect. But I know some other people that did not go to school in the 80s that this movie still touches, and I still think it has an impact. All right, let's get to our first controversial movie because I know people don't like it. Number 48, Batman Forever, 1995, directed by Joel Schumacher, stars Val Kilmer, Tommy Lee Jones, Jim Carrey, Nicole Kidman, and Chris O'Donnell. Yeah, I know people do not like this movie. This was the birth of bat nipples and kind of returning Batman to Batman 66, the TV show. But I love Batman Forever. I actually think it is one of the best superhero movies out there. For a long time, this was my number one superhero movie, but since there has been some others, as you'll see coming up, I think there is a great story here. I think everything works. Yes, it's over the top, it's campy, but I always kind of like my comic book movies. I don't have to have realism. I like that it's painted like a comic book and it looks like a comic book. But I think the best thing is that there's a heart to this story. I think they balance many subplots to the best of their degree. And I think the Batman and Robin dynamic is perfect in this. How, Bruce Wayne is trying to tell Dick Grayson, you don't want to get into this life. I think they handle it so well. Sadly, they kind of ruined it with Batman and Robin, but I still think Batman Forever is a great film. Number 47, Blazing Saddles, 1974. Director Mel Brooks stars Cleve Vaughn Little, Gene Wilder, Slim Pickens, and Harvey Korman. And I got to mention Madeline Kahn. This is a hilarious movie. It is so wrong. Even Mel Brooks says to this day, this movie would not get made. And I just saw it on the big screen for the first time, and I absolutely love this movie. I like comedies that can get down and dirty, and back then it was a different time. You could get away with this stuff. If you're not into that kind of comedy, I don't recommend it, but I don't know too many people who do not like Blazing Saddles. They're usually from that generation or a little bit older, but it's a funny, funny movie. And it takes a swipe at everyone. It's not just making fun of one, it takes a shot at everyone, and it's still entertaining and holds up. Number 46, Fight Club. Director David Fincher stars Brad Pitt, Edward Norton, Meatloaf, and oh my God, I forgot her name. I can't remember her name, the actress in this. Oh, Helena Bonham Carter had to get it through there because she is definitely one of the highlights in this movie. This movie affected my life in a big way, and I have to say, it still does. When I was trying to find myself as a gay man in this world, I always had this obsession of trying to find my place in the world. And when it wasn't happening, I'd get frustrated and depressed and suicidal. And this movie kind of reminded me that there are a lot of people out there that don't have a place in this world, and it's better to just make your own place. There is so much quotable dialogue in this movie, and I love the filming of this. I think it's still one of David Fincher's best movies. It definitely had an impact in my life, and it gives a big two middle fingers up. Going, screw you, society. And I really love this movie. Number 45, anybody who knows me does not need an explanation for this. Xanadu, 1980, directed by Robert Greenwald, stars Olivia Newton-John, Gene Kelly, and Michael Beck. I love Xanadu. I know this is probably in a lot of people's top 50 of worst films, but you know what? Over the years, I've shown many people this movie, and yeah, maybe even you listening. I watched it with you for the first time. And I know a lot of people who say, you know, it's bad. And I'll admit, the story is bad, but the musical numbers cheer me up. This is my go-to movie to make me smile. I just think Olivia is so perfect as the Australian roller skating muse, and Gene Kelly adds a little bit of class. When he's on the screen, he's just magical. Throw in the soundtrack with Olivia Newton-John songs, and of course the Electric Light Orchestra, and this movie runs so fast for me because they don't spend too much time. They know the storyline's horror, so they just go from one musical number to the next, and each one is just a mind-blown experience as of 70s and 80s visuals. And yeah, great soundtrack, great songs, and a great movie. Number 44, A Christmas Story, 1983, directed by Bob Clark, stars Peter Billingsley, Melinda Dillon, Darren McGavin, and Scott Schwartz. This is the only Christmas movie on my list. It's one of my favorites. Well, it is my favorite. Christmas Vacation would be probably the next. I just love this movie. Takes place in the 1940s. Most of you have seen this movie. They run it all the time when Christmas came. I think this was one of the movies that was responsible for the obsession of Christmas stories, and I still think this one holds up. It was a flop when it hit theaters, and I did not see it in theaters. I saw this way later with everybody else. Even though it tells a story in the 1940s, I think there's enough nostalgia in this movie that we can all relate to something. The little stories are so intricate that I think we can relate to one of the characters or one of the situations. And this movie has so much heart, and it's still a very funny movie. Yeah, it's not perfect, but it's like, you know, comfort food when you watch it around the holidays. It just warms you up like a nice hot chocolate with marshmallows in it. Number 43, Scream, 1996, directed by Wes Craven, Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, stars David Arquette and Skeet Ulrich. This movie blew me away. The horror scene was getting a little predictable with all the slasher films and all the, 19 sequels of the horror monsters we want. And then Scream came around and was a really smart script, and it really is. And it knocked the horror genre on its ass and basically kind of called out all the problems in the horror genre. Sadly, eventually the Scream sequels, although I enjoy all of them, started making the same mistakes that other horror things, but it really opened up a new page in horror, and I think it is one of the best horrors out there. Even today, it works in so many ways, and I think it all comes down to the script. I also find that this is one of the first movies that actually utilized the cell phone. They actually use the cell phone in the series a lot, and I think it's a great film and holds up. Number 42, 9 to 5, 1980, directed by Colin Higgins, starring Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Dolly Parton, Dabney Coleman. My dad took me to the theater to see this movie, and I fell in love with it immediately. I loved the three ladies. Even as a kid, I had a little crush on Dolly Parton. They're all three standouts in this. Jane Fonda in a role we had never really seen her in, playing the mousy secretary. Lily Tomlin is the top of her game, and Dolly Parton making her debut. And Dabney Coleman is just the perfect horrible boss. If you've never seen 9 to 5, it is great. As I said, my dad took me to this in theaters, and I had seen a lot of comedies, but I'd never seen anything like this, because this, to me, is a dark comedy. Back now, we see so many dark comedies released, but 9 to 5 came out at a time when we didn't have a lot. And this was my kind of introduction to what a dark comedy is. Basically, three women fantasizing about how they'd off the boss and then magically they find themselves in a situation where those scenarios are slowly coming true. It is a funny, funny movie. If you've never seen it, give it a chance. Yeah, some people say it's a little dated, but thank God they never did try to make a remake. I know there's been one on the table, and I know we'll get one soon enough. The TV show was just fluff, but this movie is solid. And as you can see, in my top 50 movies. Number 41, Hairspray, 2007. Directed by Adam Shankman, stars John Travolta, Queen Latifah, Nikki Blonsky, and Michelle Pfeiffer, to name a few. This has got a stellar cast, a ton of people. I love the John Waters original. It is in my top 200 movies, I believe, of all time. And it's a very good comedy, but they took it to new lengths. Even when John Waters was asked if they could do it as a musical, he said, "Well, why don't you write a couple songs and let me hear it?" Because he was afraid it was going to be in the style of like a Phantom of the Opera or a Cats. And when they played him the song Good Morning Baltimore, he figured out they got what he was trying to say in his original cult classic movie. I love that they managed to take a cult classic and knock it on its ear. I think this is one of the best musicals to movie adaptions. I think the soundtrack makes me tap my feet. It stays in my head for several days. The cast is phenomenal. John Travolta in the Divine part, I was skeptical because I'm a big Divine fan, and John Travolta playing the lead's mother is just, I think it was Oscar worthy. He just does a great job, and even though you can tell it's John Travolta, he gets lost in the role. He truly gets lost in the role, and I think it's actually one of his best acting roles to date. Check it out if you're looking for a feel-good film. Coming in at number 40, Gone with the Wind, 1939. Directed by Victor Fleming, George Cukor, and Sam Wood, starring Clark Gable, Vivien Leigh, Thomas Mitchell, and Olivia de Havilland, and Butterfly McQueen, of course. Gone with the Wind has been in the news a lot the last couple of years because a lot of people are saying, should we be watching this movie anymore? And I say yes. I don't think anything from the past should be taken lightly. This is, it's not a war movie, even though it deals with the Civil War. It's a beautiful, sudsy soap opera. And that's what the book was, and that's what this movie is. And they beautifully recaptured that on the big screen. I have actually watched this movie a surprising amount of time, and for it being one of the longest running movies, it's amazing. But I absolutely adore this film. It's got great performances. I think Vivien Leigh is spot on, and so is Clark Gable. Talk about iconic roles, like, they are perfectly cast in this role. The largeness of it, and what's even is the spectacle of it is great. What's even more entertaining is if you watch documentaries of the making of this film and how many people actually pretty much almost went crazy making this movie, including the producer. It's a great film. It's one you can just put on and just enjoy, leave your brain at the door, and be, moved and touched as well. Coming in at number 39, Avatar, 2009. Directed by James Cameron, starring Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, Sigourney Weaver, and Michelle Rodriguez. This is a movie that when I went to the theater to see, I remember talking to the person I was with saying, I hope this movie doesn't do well because every movie's going to be 3D. Well, this movie did well. It became the biggest movie of all time for a long stint there, and every movie tried to become 3D, and nobody has come close to the 3D. How did I feel? 20 minutes when the movie started and I was lost in the world of Avatar, I looked over to my friend and said, I hope every movie is filmed like this. To this day, the 3D effects are unmatched. They tried to do it in other movies, but it's so bad. But the Avatar 3D is It's phenomenal. Now, this movie isn't just on my list because of the 3D. The truth of the matter is when it was about to leave theaters, I took my partner Mike to see it. And it was in that time that the first time I saw it, I was just blown away. And the second time, I really paid attention to the story. And although I know a lot of people say it follows the story of a lot of other movies, I just found it to be a very nice story about preserving stuff and how we don't cherish the stuff and now that we have that's already in the world because we always want the next best thing. And I think it's a timely movie still, and I still think it holds up. I've watched this several times without the 3D, and I still think it's a powerful film, and that's why it's on my list. Number 38, Gladiator, directed by Ridley Scott. Starring Russell Crowe, Joaquin Phoenix, Connie Nelson, and Oliver Reed. Yes, another Ridley Scott movie. This is probably my favorite by him. Gladiator blew me away because when I went to see it, I'll be honest, I wanted to see Russell Crowe in a tunic. And I couldn't believe how much heart and storyline was in this movie. It is just a big uber spectacle. And I've seen some of the past that unfortunately didn't make my top 50, like Ben-Hur and Ten Commandments, and they're just amazing because of the times that they were made. But Gladiator gets it right, and I think it's so good that I think that's why we haven't had a really great swords and sandals kind of movie, because Gladiator got the heart as well as the action and the story. And Joaquin Phoenix's performance in this is just phenomenal, as was Russell Crowe. But Joaquin Phoenix is just such a good villain. He really pulled it off. So Gladiator, probably not surprising that it's in my top 50. I'm sure it's in a lot of people's. Number 37, A Clockwork Orange, 1971. Directed by Stanley Kubrick, stars Malcolm McDowell, Patrick McGee, Michael Bates, and Warren Clark. Have to change that because Patrick McNee is a whole different actor. Clockwork Orange is a very controversial movie. I get that. When I first saw it, it blew my mind. It kind of works in the same way as Fight Club. It's kind of a movie that, takes, normal life and reminds you that there is a grittier life out there. The first half hour is rough to get through. I used to say, you can tell what kind of person you are if you hear the music to Singing in the Rain and you either go to Gene Kelly dancing or Clockwork Orange. That tells you what it is. Luckily for me, it depends what mood I'm on. I love A Clockwork Orange. I think it's a powerful film. I think it makes a great statement. Yes, I understand why people have trouble with the first half hour. I saw this at a theater maybe about 10 years ago, and I had always heard people walked out of the first half hour, and there were still people who walked out of the first hour. And if a movie from 71 can still have that impact, it's doing something right. I think this is a great film. I revisit it every once in a while. I love the iconic look of Malcolm McDowell's character and his fellow droogs. I was obsessed with it when I was a kid, I won't lie. But I do get the meaning. I'm not one of those people that it's all about the first half hour, because that's the reason why Kubrick pulled this from British theaters, is because gangs and stuff were taking the first part and idolizing that, not getting the actual meaning. I do still get the actual meaning of the movie. Coming in at number 36, The Little Mermaid, 1989 animated. Directors Ron Clements, Josh Musker. Starring the voice talents of Jodie Benson, Samuel E. Wright, Christopher Daniel Barnes. This movie is one of my all-time favorite animated films. Toy Story 3 was actually in the top 50 until I moderated, so it got pushed down to just there. There's only about two, I believe, animated films. There might be three, but I think there's only two. When I first saw Little Mermaid, I fell absolutely in love with it. My favorite Disney films up to that point, and they're also high, just not in my top 50, are the Aristocats and the Rescuers. But when Little Mermaid came, it won me over. I don't know if it was all that yearning. I thought it had a great soundtrack. I love Part of Your World. I love that yearning. And maybe because I always felt like an outsider, I always thought that there was another place for me. And when I saw this, I was definitely going through that feeling. And I think Little Mermaid captured that. Up until this point, Little Mermaid was just, you know, some silly little, you know, fairy tale. But I think Disney captured the magic. And I think there's a reason why this recaptured the Disney magic. Because if you recall, we were going through a period where Disney movies weren't doing that well. Then Little Mermaid showed up, and that led, you know, for Aladdin, that led for Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, and we got a renaissance of the movies. This movie's stellar. It still looks good, and I absolutely adore it. Number 35, Back to the Future, 1985, directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, and Crispin Glover. Yeah, for a kid of the 80s, many people probably think this would be higher up there for me, but 35 is pretty huge. I've seen a lot of movies. I think if I didn't see as many movies, I think Back to the Future would be in the top 20. But my tastes have always been huge, and they've changed a lot over the years, so some other ones snuck in there. But Back to the Future, still in my top 50, pretty solid placing. I love this movie. I have great memories about it. I got one of my best friends because of this film. I think Michael J. Fox is perfectly cast, and so is Christopher Lloyd. It tells a great story. I even like the sequels, even though they're far from close to what Back to the Future was. Still gives me great feelings. The soundtrack, the comedy. It's just a well-put-together film. So definitely had to make it into my top 50. Cult classic time, number 34, Phantom of the Paradise, 1974, directed by Brian De Palma, starring Paul Williams, William Finley, Jessica Harper, and Garrett Graham. This is a movie that I used to see a lot, and in the last couple of years, I've seen it a lot too, so it's no wonder it's become one of my big favorites. City TV used to show this movie all the time on their late great movies, Fridays at 11:30 after the news. They would show, maybe it was 10:30 because they had their news early. Anyhow, no matter. And it seems like they only had five movies that they rotated, but my brother always got excited when Phantom of the Paradise came. It's a year before Rocky Horror came out, and it became a cult classic, but I think Rocky Horror showed up a year later and became a bigger cult classic, and Phantom kind of lost its positioning where I think Phantom could have been just as big. Although, as you'll see later on, Rocky Horror placed a lot higher, I think Phantom in some ways is a better film for me. I think it's a solid film. They do have a couple problems that puts Rocky Horror a lot higher. But Phantom of the Paradise, I think, is a better constructed film. I think Brian De Palma, it's one of his best directed films. It's got an incredible soundtrack written by Paul Williams, and it's a great satire of life and the music industry at the time, and how basically corporations decided what you listen to and stuff. You know, corporate rock, you've heard that term. It's got a great cynicism in it and a great soundtrack, and it's just a great film. The look of the Phantom always kind of creeped me out as a kid, but at the same time was just... it's just a great film. I've shown it to a lot of people in the last couple of years, and yeah, it gets better and better after I watch it. Number 33, Stand By Me, 1986, directed by Rob Reiner, starring Will Wheaton, River Phoenix, Corey Feldman, and Jerry O'Connell. You know, this is a movie that captures a slice of life. There are certain movies that capture eras. Perfectly. It's not my top 50, but something like Saturday Night Fever of the 70s, and another movie that's not in my top 50, but American Graffiti for the 60s. This movie, I didn't grow up in this era, but I felt, one, that I was because of this movie, and two, that I wanted to go to this era, and I think that is a huge deal. It's a small story that was written by Stephen King, and it became one of his most beloved movies, even though it's not got horror in it. It's a coming-of-age film and reminds us that, you know, the friends that we had in the past that we don't have anymore may be the greatest friends we ever have. There's an innocence about it, but also it's around that age where you're trying to find who you are, and you're just about ready to go into high school, and high school is going to have its own things, and so the innocence of this is great. It's also got incredible soundtrack. Rob Reiner did an amazing job, and may not be the only movie in my top 50 directed by All in the Family's Meathead himself. Number 32, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, 1971, directed by Mel Stewart, starring Gene Wilder, Jack Albertson, Peter Ostrom, and Roy Kinnear. Quick trivia question for you. If you have a trivia question asking for name a movie that an actor only starred in one movie and that was it, say Peter Ostrom, the young kid who plays Charlie in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Everybody else will go for Eminem or something, but he only did this one movie, and he's really great in it. This movie is awesome, and even as a kid, it kind of creeps me out, but not as much as the child captures in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Willy Wonka has a lot of whimsicalness about it. It wasn't till older that I noticed how dark it is in tones. And that's why I like this movie, because kids can watch it and get the charm of it, but when you get older, you start realizing this is psychologically kind of... And that's why I love this movie. And it is of its time, but a couple of years ago, my friends and I watched this in E.T., and this actually held up better than E.T. did. E.T. isn't in my top 50, but Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is. Gene Wilder's performance is spectacular. And he is just an amazing actor, and he really nails it in this. The song Pure Imagination is probably one of the best songs from a movie. I have to do that list, my 25 favorite movie songs or something. Anyhow, great film, absolutely love it, and it still kind of holds up today. Great movie for Easter, too. I like it with all the chocolate candy and stuff like that. Number 31, Psycho, 1960, directed by Alfred Hitchcock, starring Anthony Perkins, Janet Leigh, Vera Miles, and John Gavin. This is a classic horror. This was a movie that I knew the ending of when I went to see it, and it still held its impact. Visually, I think Psycho is one of the greatest movies ever filmed. It's just its use of shadows and light and its use of psychology. There's going to be a mild spoiler here, but you follow this movie through Janet Leigh's eyes. And usually when you watch a movie, that's who you know is going to make it. And when she is taken out in the infamous shower scene, you realize that, no, you're going to be following this quirky little man named Anthony Perkins. Well, no, his name was Norman Bates in the movie, but he's played wonderfully by Anthony Perkins. And Psycho still holds up today. I think it's a great predecessor for future slasher films. It's not the original one, but it's the one that definitely caught people's attention. Great, great film, and definitely my favorite Alfred Hitchcock film. We're cracking the top 30, so let's get controversial, shall we? Number 30, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, 2016, directed by Zack Snyder, starring Ben Affleck, Henry Cavill, Amy Adams, and Jesse Eisenberg. A lot of people did not like this movie, but when I first went to see it, I was sitting in my seat thinking they nailed this movie. I looked over to my partner, and he said that he thought it was quite good, too. Then I read reviews of it and couldn't believe how many people hated on it. I think Ben Affleck is perfect as Batman, and I think Henry Cavill is the epitome of Superman. Now, I grew up with the Chris Reeves movies, and Chris Reeves for me will always be Superman. But Henry Cavill got the whole feeling of Superman and gets the whole mythos of it. And Superman's a character that doesn't get any love now, and a lot of newer generations don't relate to Superman. But if they do, Henry Cavill will be the reason for it because he nails this role and understands it. I think this movie builds tension. I think it's great. I even think Jesse Eisenberg is perfect as Lex Luthor. He is not the Lex Luthor we know in comics. This is the Lex Luthor that is going to build to that. But sadly, because nobody got that, we will never see that side. And it's really sad because I think it is such a strong performance. I love the feeling I got came out, and I decided I'm defending this movie until my, dying day. It's a great, great film. Number 29, Some Like It Hot, 1959, directed by Billy Wilder, starring Marilyn Monroe, Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon, and George Raft. One of my favorite comedies. This is old school, not for everyone, but certainly for me. I think it's one of Billy Wilder's best. I also like The Apartment, which just missed being in my top 50. But the more I see that one, I have a feeling that one's going to creep into it. I like Some Like It Hot. It's of its era. I think Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon are hilarious when they dress in drag. Such a simple premise, but it's kind of cute and naughty and a lot of fun, and definitely one you should definitely check out. Number 28, Bohemian Rhapsody, 2018, directed by Bryan Singer, starring Rami Malek, Lucy Boynton, Gilowyn Lee, and Ben Hardy. This blew me away. I've always loved biopics, but there's never been any that have really blown me away. I think the best one before this was probably Coal Miner's Daughter, which I became obsessed with. But when I saw this movie, and even though some people, it's not necessarily in right chronological order, but I understand that that sometimes happens. And honestly, it's how you make a movie. Sometimes you change it up a bit just so we get the right movie, and they did all the right things. I know the director Bryan Singer is not exactly loved right now, and for if he is guilty of the stuff he was thing, then deservedly so. But he basically ended his career on a high note if he did, because this movie was just absolutely just phenomenal. Of course, the soundtrack is all Queen music. I love the songs they chose. Rami Malek's performance is top-notch. There's another biopic that's going to be a little higher, and we'll talk about that. But this is, some people call this a standard biopic. I think it took it to the next level, and I think the whole Live Aid performance is worth the price of admission. So, definitely. Definitely a worthy choice. Coming in at number 27, Return of the Jedi, directed by Richard Marquand, starring Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Billy Dee Williams. And yes, I could have easily put the Star Wars movies in the top 10 because I love the original three, but the way I did it, as I said, I mixed it around so I could have sci-fi, horror, a little bit of everything in this, and that put Jedi at 27. This is actually probably one of my favorite of the things, but when I was looking at movies, I decided to put it as third, even though it probably in my heart still stays number one. I remember my dad taking me to this film, and I remember just bawling my eyes out with the finale, and I won't give it away, even though most of you have probably seen it. It's just a powerful, for me, conclusion. At that time, we thought it was a conclusion, so I'm going to call it a conclusion. And it is just a great movie. After The Empire Strikes Back, which is coming up, That was an awesome movie too, but it was more Shakespearean. They took chances. Return of the Jedi kind of brings it back together. I can see why some people consider it the worst of the three. I don't like calling it worst. The not as great as the other two. We'll go with that. For me, I think it's just an incredible film. The build-up at the end, the beginning at Jabba's palace, and the barge fight is probably one of my favorite sequences, right, of the whole series. We're talking prequels, sequels, all that. And so Return of the Jedi has a nice footing right there. Number 26 is Jurassic Park, 1993, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum, and Richard Attenborough. This movie, the more I see it, the more I realize this is a great film. Funny story, when I saw it first at the drive-in, the movie was so dark it was hard to see in the drive-in, and I thought it was just mediocre. People were raving about it, so my friend and I decided to go check it out at a real theater, and it was like seeing a totally different film. The T-Rex sequence is probably one of my favorite sequences in all movie history. It'd be definitely up there. It's just a wonderful sequence, and the whole movie. The more I see it, the more I realize this is a beautifully crafted movie. The soundtrack is phenomenal, the characters are phenomenal, the storyline. And to this date, there is some stuff in the movie, like the computers and stuff, that have outdated, but those dinosaurs still look pretty darn real. I still, when I see it, it's like, wow, where did they find real dinosaurs? And I still feel that way every time I see it. And as I said, it's got some heart in this movie, and that's heart goes a long way with me. So, love it, love it, love it. We're at the halfway point at number 25. We've got Rain Man, 1988, directed by Barry Levinson, starring Dustin Hoffman, Tom Cruise, Valerie Galino, and Gerald R. Molin. Buddy trip movie about a brother who finds out he has another brother that's been locked away in an institution. One of Tom Cruise's best performances. He didn't get Oscar nominated. I think it's a crime. Dustin Hoffman won the Oscar for it, but the reason I think Tom Cruise should have got one is because they work together. Because he's playing an autistic person, they work together in this movie. But Tom Cruise's character is pretty solid, where Dustin Hoffman needs the Tom Cruise character in order to work. And Tom Cruise stands alone as a character. I love Charlie Babbitt, which is Tom Cruise's character. He is so not a perfect character. In fact, he can be a bit of a dick. And we do see him falling for his brother in this. I like so much of it. I recently shared it with my friend Damien, who didn't get the same feel, which is sad, but I did. I still think this is a lovely movie. I still think it's one of Tom Cruise's best, and I still think it sits nice. And it's the first movie that let me know about autism, which eventually would play a part in my life because I know I've taught some people with autism, and I know some people with Asperger's, which is, a milder side of it. But it actually educated me as well as entertained. Number 24, Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. Yeah, I know some people consider this their favorite movie of all time. I like this movie, and I still think the Darth and Luke lightsaber sword is the best out of all the series, but it's not as high as other movies. I like this movie a lot. It's, the Star Wars movies in a whole. I wish I could honestly put them in a trilogy and put that rank that in my thing because they work together all together. It's actually saddening to see something as awesome as Empire Strikes Back at 24. But then when I look at the other movies in my list, I'm like, well, what would I move? Because I like them too. As I said, if I was listing just like my favorite sci-fi, it would be much higher. But because I did it in a way to get that mix, it works great. They took a solid movie and made it even better. I find this very Shakespearean. They took a chance by breaking up the characters, and it worked because I think we get more of an essence of who the characters are. So when they come together in Return of the Jedi, we see them as bigger characters. An incredible, incredible thing. Did I mention who starred in that? I don't think I did. That's a 1980 film directed by Irvin Kershner, starring Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Billy Dee Williams. Definitely want to get that information out there. Number 23. Oh, it's Meathead again. This is Spinal Tap, 1984, directed by Rob Reiner, starring Rob Reiner, Michael McKean, Christopher Guest, and Kimberly Stringer. This is one of my favorite comedies. And the weird thing is when I first saw it, I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I did not like it. I must not have been in a good mood. And then my friend and I rewatched it, and I was just rolling on the floor. I got all the jokes. I was, if you ever watched rock documentaries, this movie is a perfect spoof of that. And the characters are so real and convincing that it's hard not to fall in love with this movie. It's just great, but I can see people who aren't into rock documentaries not getting this. But I am glad that I finally get it. It's probably one of my most quoted movies out there, and I just think it's solid. And definitely check it out if you're a rock fan and never seen it before. And speaking of which, number 22, Rocket Man, 2019, directed by Dexter Fletcher, starring Taron Egerton, Jamie Bell, Richard Madden, and Bryce Dallas Howard. Yeah, after coming off Bohemian Rhapsody, I didn't think that they could top what they did in that, and they did. Rocket Man is a lot different, and I'm kind of glad the director is getting recognized for it, Dexter Fletcher, because he actually is the guy who came in to take over Bryan Singer's part in Bohemian Rhapsody. But when they released Bohemian Rhapsody, there was still a lot of Bryan Singer, so he got the credit. I'm glad he got the credit on this, and this movie is so different. Where Bohemian Rhapsody is just telling a regular biopic story, Rocket Man turns it into a fantasy where the songs are used in musical performances. They actually sing the situations, and it really makes for a beautiful and heartbreaking film. I'm saddened that Rocket Man doesn't get the love that Bohemian Rhapsody does, but I get it. Rocket Man is a very artistic film, and a lot of people who don't get that creative side of it don't like it as much. I also think that, and this may sound morbid to you, but I think because Freddie Mercury's dead is one of the reasons why there's more of an allure. We still have Elton John, and this only covers the first half of his life. So I think that's why. Taron Egerton is phenomenal in this role. In fact, I think he would have had a shot at getting an Oscar nomination if Rami Malek didn't win the year prior. They're both phenomenal, but Taron Egerton actually sings as Elton, and I think that's the plus that knocks him over. I never realized I was so... I identified with Elton John until I saw this movie. I have seen it many times since it's been released, and it is had no problem infiltrating my top 50. Number 21, Halloween, 1978, directed by John Carpenter, starring Donald Pleasence, Jamie Lee Curtis, Toni Morrison, and Nancy Kies. And I got to mention, oh my God, I forgot her name. PJ Souls, because she's one of my favorite cult actresses out there. Anyhow, yeah, this movie is the groundbreaker for some. There were other movies that, you know, like I said, Psycho was the slasher film, but Halloween took it to artistic new levels. I was actually terrified of this movie when I was a kid. I was afraid to see it. I saw a Siskel and Ebert review of the best horror movies of all time, and this was in there. And there was images in the movie that frightened me forever. And the thing is when I finally went to see it, I bought a VHS copy, and I literally remember watching it in an afternoon with all the windows open so I wouldn't have nightmares. It didn't help. I had nightmares. This is one of my favorite slasher movies, and it's just absolutely phenomenal to me. I still think it holds up well. I watched it recently, and John Carpenter not only nailed the direction, but he does an incredible soundtrack too. Everything about this is so low budget, but it's still a huge movie when you watch it, to me. It just did so much and changed the landscape of horror, and it deserved to be one of my favorite films. Blows me away that it was because of how chicken I was to watch it. It still scares me too when I watch it. I still, that moment when you have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I still make a dash for it, thinking Michael Myers is waiting for me somewhere in the house. And Jamie Lee Curtis and Donald Pleasance definitely add so much to this movie. Number 20, Dirty Dancing, 1987, directed by Emile Ardolino, starring Patrick Swayze, Jennifer Grey, Jerry Orbach, and Cynthia Rhodes. When I went to see Dirty Dancing, this was written off as nothing, and I remember going to the theater and remember just how packed it was. You got to remember, Patrick Swayze wasn't a big star. He had done a whole bunch of movies, but it was this movie that made him a star. I don't know what it was. Were we looking for another dancing movie? We haven't had any since, all the ones after Flashdance and Footloose were kind of crappy, and then this one came along, and this became a phenomenon. I'm kind of glad I was there when it all happened. This movie, the soundtrack was huge. Everybody wanted to be like Johnny Castle. Jennifer Grey is amazing in this. She doesn't get enough love, but she is. I remember tours of the soundtrack. I remember going to Hamilton Place and watching some of the people that are on the soundtrack singing their songs, which is just unreal. I remember people wanting to learn how to dirty dance. This was a phenomenon. I don't blame them for making a sequel. Never saw it, never interested. This one was too awesome to me. Johnny Castle, the part Patrick Swayze plays, is still, you fall in love with him. You either, if you're a woman or a gay man, you fall in love with him. And if you're a guy, you just want to be him or hang out with him and hope some of that cool comes off. Yeah, just a great performance. Number 19, Frozen, 2013, directed by Chris Buck and Jennifer Lee, starring the vocal talents of Kristen Bell, Idina Menzel, Jonathan Groff, and Josh Gad. And this is my highest ranking animated film. I loved Little Mermaid. It had a nice run as my favorite animated film, but once Frozen came, again, this is a movie I did not want to see. I saw the trailers and all I thought was, oh, this looks horrible and that snowman is going to be awful. And I went to it and I deliberately avoided a 3D. I wanted the cheapest version and I remember falling in love with this movie so much so that the following week I went to see it in 3D. This movie tells a great story. It's got really strong characters, female and otherwise. I think all the characters are pretty interesting. The snowman is not annoying. He gets more annoying in Frozen 2. The songs are really playful and fun. This movie got me on a couple of plot twists that no Disney movie has ever caught me on before. And the love story in this is really different than anything we had ever seen before. Frozen also became a phenomenon, and I don't blame it. I'm very disappointed that Frozen 2 did not live up for me, but Frozen, as you can see, is still in my top 50 as my highest ranked animated film. Coming in at number 18, Natural Born Killers, 1994, directed by Oliver Stone. Starring Woody Harrelson, Juliette Lewis, Tom Sizemore, Rodney Dangerfield. What can I say? Very different from Frozen, but I was obsessed with this movie when it came out. I remember two things. Three things. I remember playing the soundtrack ad nauseam. I remember getting a pair of those circle red glasses, and I remember thinking, I want to direct a film. No movie had ever made me want to direct a movie more. Now, that was still a pipe dream. I don't think I'll ever direct a film. But this movie, I came out. I had never seen a movie like this. Oliver Stone was always hit and miss with me. I loved The Doors. I loved Born on the 4th of July. It wasn't so crazy on JFK or But Natural Born Killers is like nothing I ever seen before. They don't even use a musical score. They use just all other music. And Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis are just phenomenal in this movie. I only knew Woody Harrelson from Cheers, and to see him in this movie, I think this is where I got my love for Woody Harrelson, as in I was so attracted to him. I'm not even the biggest fan of, like, I love movies that are gory or, but I'm not necessarily a fan of movies that just use violence for exploitation. But I find there's a couple in my top 50, I can't deny, are there. This is one of them, but I think it tells a story. I think this movie is more of a satire on social media, and I think it still resounds today. This is a mind fuck in all levels, and I still think it's an incredible movie that, as I said, I was obsessed with. Just like this next film. Number 17, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. 1991, directed by Kevin Reynolds, Kevin Costner, Morgan Freeman, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, Christian Slater. What can I say about this movie? Except that I should also mention another actor that was left off this list, and I can't remember his name. He just recently passed away a couple years ago and was in Die Hard. Also a great villain in that, and I'm gonna hate myself because I can't remember his name. But I'm looking it up right now because he's one of the best parts of Robin Hood, and he needs to be. Alan Rickman! I am so not a movie fan. Just, yeah, I'm taking that tag away. Yeah, he's great in it. In fact, there's a lot of great performances in it. Not necessarily Kevin Costner's, although I fell for Kevin Costner big time in this movie. But his attempt at trying a British accent and then dropping it is really disturbing sometimes. When you go for a movie that's just pure entertainment and just comedy, action, romance, you can't do better than this. I'm not the only one. I've talked to other people who were around when this was in theaters, and they were just as obsessed as me. The Bryan Adams song, Everything I Do It For You, just perfect. Visually, it's a stunning movie. It's just a lot of fun. And as I said, some of the movies don't have to be political or this was an artistic achievement. I admit this is not an artistic achievement. I just think it's a great film, and that's why it's so high on my list. Coming in at number 16, The Avengers. 2012, directed by Joss Whedon, and starring Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Jeremy Renner, and so many other great people. I wasn't a big Marvel fan, but I became a Marvel fan thanks to the cinematic Marvel Universe. And I started falling in love with all the characters like Iron Man and Thor and Black Widow and Captain America. And when they all came together in one movie, I thought it was amazing. I thought the movie was phenomenal. As I said, I was more of a Justice League fan, but as you see, Justice League is nowhere near my top 50. So Marvel did a great job. The thing that's incredible about this movie is thinking what they did after this. Like, but I still think the first Avengers movies is the best. And even though the movies got bigger and better, I still think this one is a well put together movie, and it just worked. And I think by this point they knew they had something and they could do no wrong. And then this movie led them to take chances in other fields. And yeah, my hats go off to the Avengers, very high up on my list. Coming in at number 15, Raiders of the Lost Ark, 1981, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Harrison Ford, Karen Allen, Paul Freeman, and John Rhys-Davies. Absolutely love this movie. I didn't get to see it in theaters. I was a little bit of a wuss. I do not like tarantulas, and I knew there was a tarantula scene. When I finally got to see this movie, I actually rolled my eyes because of how quick the scene was. So I paid for it, but I eventually did get to see it on the big screen, and this movie gets better and better for me. I actually think I probably like The Last Crusade just a touch better, but I'm kind of rewarding the movies that won me over the first time. And I thought Harrison Ford was sexy as Han Solo, but I think he's even more sexier as Indiana Jones. Raiders of the Lost Ark is pure magic and tells a great story. I'm a big fan of those old 30s and 40s serials, and this captured it perfectly. And I know this is on everybody else's list too, so I don't have to praise it that much. Coming in at number 14, Moulin Rouge, 2001, directed by Baz Luhrmann, starring Nicole Kidman, Ewan McGregor, John Leguizamo, and Jim Broadbent. I just watched this recently, and guess what? My heart was still a flutter. I love this movie. It is over the top and crazy. And yeah, maybe the person I showed it to didn't love it quite as much as me, but I know lots of people who think this is a phenomenal film. Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor at their best. I always liked Ewan McGregor as an actor, but I never got his sex appeal until this movie. And I think it's the exact moment he begins singing Elton John's Your Song. And after that, every movie, past and present, I've seen Ewan McGregor in, I get the appeal of him. He is so hot. And Moulin Rouge brings it. Baz Luhrmann directs this in such a pace. I'm a big fan of his Red Trilogy. Red Curtain Trilogy, which is also includes Romeo and Juliet and Strictly Ballroom, but Moulin Rouge, as you can see, is my favorite. It's the only one in the top 50. I love the musical chances they take. I like the comedy. I think it's such a imperfect, perfect film in my eyes, and I just absolutely adore it. Coming in at number 13, Joker, 2019. Directed by Todd Phillips, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Robert De Niro, Zazie Beetz, and Frances Conroy. Anybody who knows me knows I was obsessed with this movie last year, and I have watched it about five times. In fact, five times. I actually own this on Blu-ray, and I've never watched it on Blu-ray. This is five times in the theater, and a lot of the movies that you're hearing in the top 20 here, I've seen in the theaters a lot more than I've probably seen on. Anyhow, Joker is amazing. Some people write this movie off as Joaquin Phoenix's performance is what makes it amazing, and I agree. But I think this movie is a lot more. And I find there are two groups. As I said, some people love the movie, and some people love Joaquin Phoenix's performance, but don't love the movie. I actually find that people who are dealing with mental issues or get this movie a little bit more. It paints Joker in a very way. They try to paint him sympathetic, but they show enough evil in him where he's not 100% that way. They also take a look at what causes mental illness. It's not just what's going on in your mind, that's a big part of it. It's society can create it. Industry can create it, and they don't back down. I think this is a very important film because it teaches us stuff. I'm sad when I hear people writing it off as fluff because this movie, I think, touches on social mental issues better than any one I have ever seen. But people write it off as it's just a comic book movie. I have to remind myself this is based on a comic book, because to me, it's much more than that. And if you haven't seen it and are still on the fence, give it a shot. Coming in at number 12, Star Trek 2009, directed by J.J. Abrams, starring Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana, Simon Pegg, and Leonard Nimoy. If you would tell me one day that a Star Trek movie would hit my top 50, I would tell you you're crazy, sir. I saw a couple of the original Star Trek movies in theaters and absolutely got bored of them and refused to go see any more. When I heard it was being rebooted, I wasn't certain about it, but two things won me over. One, Chris Pine is damn handsome. And when I saw those trailers, I was just drooling. And two, I heard J.J. Abrams fan was more of a Star Wars movie, Star Wars fan than a Star Trek fan. So when I went out to this movie, I was blown away. Again, I've seen this movie about five times in theaters, and I even forced one of my friends who was not a big Star Trek fan to go see it. And in the opening sequence, before the title came up, he looked at me and said, "This is already a better movie than most Star Trek movies." Now, if you're a Star Trek fan, I'm not dissing you in any way, but for me, I'm not a big Star Trek fan. I loved all three of the ones J.J. Abrams either directed or helped produce. The first one is still top-notch. I think it's great. I think all the actors played their characters perfectly without trying to be them. They basically took essences of the original characters and made it their own without not losing some of that in there. And I think it's just a great, great film. Coming in at number 11, Guardians of the Galaxy 2014, directed by James Gunn, starring Chris Pratt, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, Zoe Saldana, to name a few. And I, again, this is just a great film. This is the highest Marvel movie, so don't look for anything higher. I went into this, like many of us, not knowing anything about this comic book, and absolutely fell in love with all the characters. Star-Lord, well, yeah, Chris Pratt's cute, what can I say? But all the characters are just so well put together. I love the second one, too. It didn't make my top 50, but it is certainly one of my all-time favorites. It just, the feel of this movie, it has the right amount of action. It has the right amount of comedy. It has the right amount of heart in this movie. And the characters are what makes this movie. And I just think it's the best Marvel movie to date. And yeah, I know a lot of people don't see it that way, but I certainly do. It almost cracked my top 10, but it didn't. But guess what? These ones did. Here is my 10 favorite movies of all time. Coming in at number 10, Airplane, 1980, directed by Jim Abrams, David Zucker, Jerry Zucker, starring Robert Hayes, Julia Hegarty, Leslie Nielsen. I remember going with my dad to see this at the Century Theater and not knowing what I was getting into. Now, I've never seen this style of comedy. The closest I can say is Mel Brooks movies. And when I was in 1980, I would have been 12, and I hadn't been exposed yet to the Mel Brooks movies. And if I did, they were probably edited on TV, so I thought they were funny, but not. But when you see Airplane, I remember at 12 years old, it is so funny. I've never seen so much rapid fire jokes. My little brain just couldn't keep up. And I actually love watching this movie because for a short time in the 80s and 90s, every time I watched it, I found a new joke that I missed because I was laughing at another joke. And it is one of my all-time favorite comedies. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is like, I could have wrote it off as I was a 12-year-old, you know, like something like a Police Academy. I was young when it came out. But you know what? I've rewatched it in recent years, and it still makes me laugh. And it's not in a nostalgic kind of way. It literally is a funny, funny movie. And it's no surprise to me why it is number 10 on my list. Number 9, Top Gun, 1986, directed by Tony Scott, starring Tom Cruise, Kelly McGillis, Val Kilmer, and Tim Robbins. And why do they not have Goose in this listing? I'm reading off IMDb, and they literally do not have Anthony Edwards. Is that his name? I want to make sure. Anthony Edwards. You can't forget Goose. Top Gun, guilty pleasure. 1986. I went into this with no expectations. Fell absolutely 100% in love with Tom Cruise. I don't know too many who didn't. Fell in love with the soundtrack. Enjoyed the story. This is a movie that is pure male ego. But I know a lot of women who like watching it. For the good-looking guys, the shirtless volleyball scene. There is a heart in this movie, and this movie defined my 80s. This was, I knew I'd never be a guy like Maverick. I would never even be a guy like Goose, though I was closer to Goose. This deals with friendship. It has a solid story. There's so much machismo in this movie. It's almost a little embarrassing. It was a phenomenon. It's almost a little embarrassing that it's in my top 10, but I know other people that have it. And if you were brought up in the 80s, it's not really a surprise when you hear this is a much loved movie. But yeah, I just think it's just a great, great film. And you know, looking at it now, it's very dated. What I find is funny is the music is dated, but the clothes really aren't. And the reason why is because the guys pretty much just wear jeans and white t-shirts. And Kelly McGillis' character wears like a office, like a dress suit, a pants, and she look, it's still styling. But, you know, yes, the 80s soundtrack, but everything about this oozes the 80s. And that's why it's in here, because I love the 80s and I'm not afraid to say it. Coming in at number 8, the only movie in the last 4 years that infiltrated my top 10. And any of you who know me are probably whispering the title to yourself because you know my obsession with number 8, Baby Driver, 2017, directed by Edgar Wright, starring Ansel Elgort, Kevin Spacey, John Hamm, Aiza Gonzalez. And again, why did they leave out the girl in this? And I gotta remember the girl, because there's a couple girls in this that are close actors. Is it, I can't remember, Lily James. I have such a man crush on Lily James. I know it sounds funny, but I'm a gay man, so, you know, as you've heard, all my crushes are on any, and don't get me wrong, I had a major crush on Ansel Elgort in this movie, but Lily James, after I saw Mamma Mia and this, Mamma Mia 2 and this, I became just big fan of hers. This movie blew me away. When I saw the trailers, I knew I wanted to see this, but I didn't know how much I loved it till the first time I was in the theater and just fell in love with everything. Edgar Wright's direction, the performances in this, and yes, even Kevin Spacey. This movie hit just before his scandal, and I'm not a fan of the stuff he did, but I'm also a believer that a movie shouldn't get hated because of that, because a lot of people worked on this. This is Ansel Elgort is perfect in the role of Baby Driver. John Hamm, one of his best roles I've ever seen him in. I've always liked him, but I've always just thought he was kind of okay. But this movie, he kind of nails it. I said the thing I love about this screenplay is that even the smallest character is a well-rounded character. I want to get to know every character in this, whether it's Ansel Elgort's character, or Jamie Foxx, or John Bernthal, who has just got a small, small role. This movie is so fleshed out, and of course that soundtrack is so phenomenal, the music that plays in babies' ears. I don't want that ear-ringing thing, but I do want to be wearing, I want to do this life with Walkman on, because a lot of my life is a soundtrack, and this movie just blew me away. Again, I saw it in theaters 5 times. That seems to be my golden number. And I've watched it several times on my Blu-ray too. And this movie is just become one of my all-time favorites. And I never get bored watching it. Coming in at number 7, Brokeback Mountain, 2005. Director Ang Lee, starring Heath Ledger, Jake Gyllenhaal, Michelle Williams, Randy Quaid, and Anne Hathaway. Wow. For being a gay man, there are not a lot of gay movies in my top 50. There are a couple that are gay iconic movies, but this actually has a love story in it. It's probably one of the best love stories I've ever seen on film because it's built through friendship. One of my best moments of seeing this film is it was closing at the one theater, and I wanted to see it on the big screen one more time. And the theater wasn't packed. It had a good amount of people in it, but I was impressed to see how many little old ladies were there seeing it. I had heard this movie offended a lot of older Hollywood because they refused to see the gay cowboy movie. But if you write it off as that, then that's all you're going to see of this. But to be honest with you, this movie is just so much more than that. This is one of the best romantic movies out there. And, you know, I would be, say, put your homophobia or put your any concerns aside. Just watch it as a friendship movie and try to see it like that. And see if you can't find the love story in there, because it's so wonderful. But it touched me to see all these older women just being, you know, wiping tears from their eyes because this is such an impactful romance movie. And sadly, it always gets criminalized as the gay cowboy movie. I actually stopped watching the Oscars for almost 20 years because this didn't win. It won Best Director, it won Best Screenplay, it won Best Score, and then they gave it to the movie Crash. And a lot of old school Hollywood said that they even refused to see this movie. Now it's funny because when they show montages of the greatest films ever, you very seldom see Crash in there, but Brokeback Mountain is always in there. So I think the Oscars know that they kind of made a mistake that year. Number six, Jaws, 1975, directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Roy Scheider, Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss, and Lorraine Gary. If you've been doing the tallying, Steven Spielberg has the most movies. This is his third movie in my top 50, and Jaws remains one of his bests. I love so many of his movies, and because I see so many movies, there'd be a lot more if I did, you know, best directed films. Jaws gets better with every viewing. First time I ever saw Jaws was on the Sunday night ABC movie, and it was so cut and edited. But I was a little guy when this came out, and I remember seeing the posters, and I actually thought it was about a dolphin, even though the teeth never... I wasn't saying I was a smart kid. My brother said, no, you're not seeing that. So I saw it on the TV, and even though it was edited and was still powerful, I still jumped at some of the jump scares in this movie. And I've seen it since so many times. I think this is a movie I actually watch once a year. When I first saw it on the big screen, it's just a great film. The reason why Jaws shouldn't get remade is, and why every other shark movie, even though there's been some great ones, have not gotten close to Jaws, is because Jaws is a horror movie, but it's a psychological thriller, more like a psycho, more like an alien. The shark is a big part of it, but it's more about the three main characters and the journey to get this shark rather than the shark. So when people say, oh, it was kind of boring, like the new generations, it's kind of boring. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's not one of those shark movies where you just see CGI sharks, you know. I think even though people love movies like Sharknado and Sharktopus, and I think a lot of it has kind of destroyed the shark movies, because Jaws holds up well just as a movie alone, but it's a psychological thing, and that's what people don't get. Coming in at number five, The Wizard of Oz, 1939, directed by Victor Fleming. A lot of people according to this, but I'm going to stick with Victor Fleming. On starring Judy Garland, Frank Morgan, Ray Bolger, Burt Lahr, and Margaret Hamilton. You got to mention her. Wizard of Oz, probably the first classic any kid we'll ever see. Maybe not now. Pixar's done a lot of good movies. They might not be on my list, but The Wizard of Oz, I remember, I said once to someone that the reason why it works so well is because it's kind of our first introduction to darkness and goth. It deals with witches, it deals with power, it deals with finding your inner self. There's so many things. I recently had a talk with a young man about the importance of The Wizard of Oz. Not the fact that it's a technical miracle for 1939, but it deals with so many bigger issues. And if you just watch it for fun, you can. It's still a delightful film with, you know, beautifully wonderful characters, but it deals with so much. It deals with the power of good and bad. It deals with finding the inner hero inside of yourself. It deals with the concepts of, you know, there's no place like home. It's a movie that actually is dripping with so much stuff. It's got nostalgia, but it still seems fresh to me. I know a couple people say they don't like it because it doesn't have that freshness anymore, but I still think the effects look good. I think the costumes still look amazing, and it's just a wonderful film. The soundtrack is really good. Somewhere Over the Rainbow, another song. If I do my top 50 greatest movie music, that might even be the number one song. It's such a perfect, perfect movie in so many ways. I remember when they re-released this to theaters and I saw it on the big screen, and I've been lucky to see it on the big screen several times. I remember one time walking home with my friend and we were talking about the depth of Wizard of Oz. And I said, you know, and I was young when I said this, when I was 20, I said, when I die, one of the things I will miss most is watching The Wizard of Oz. Just the colors, the light, the feel, and I know it was a weird thing to say, but it stuck with me, and I wanted to share that with you. I think The Wizard of Oz is a near-perfect movie in my eyes. We're getting there. Number four, The Rocky Horror Picture Show, 1975, directed by Jim Sharman, starring Tim Curry, Susan Sarandon, Barry Bostwick, and Richard O'Brien, to name but a few. And this is a movie that, no surprise, touched my life. Anybody who knows me knows this movie touched my life. I heard the soundtrack about a year before I saw the movie, and I love the songs. And when I was old enough, I got to go see this at the Broadway Cinema on King William in Hamilton. And my friend took me, and we were going for the experience. This is when they used to do everything. They used to do, like, the raining, you know, you'd squirt bottles, squirt guns. They'd throw rice. Like, this was full on. Like, you don't get that at theaters anymore. And I was lucky enough that I got to see one of the last performances. The year was 85. It was 10 years after the movie came out. Being a young gay man, I've always talked about the importance of this film for not only gay people, but for people who are trying to find their place in their world. I remember this was such an experience. Not only did I get to see it rain in the theater, and just, I remember being on the bus home, you know, digging rice out of my shoes and thinking I had a great time watching people jump up and do the Time Warp. I was a little nervous. It wasn't until later I got to do that kind of stuff when I actually hosted a Rocky Horror Picture couple of nights at the Staircase, which some of my fondest memories at the Staircase. But the moment Tim Curry steps out of that elevator and starts singing Sweet Transvestite, being a young gay man who was always afraid to be myself and hiding in a closet, I suddenly saw a full audience whooping and hollering at this character who was wearing high heels and stockings and a bustier and full-on makeup, and these people were in love with this character. This character was a villain, and they were in love with this character. And I went home believing that one day I could actually be myself. And I think that's powerful. And when I think of how many people this movie has touched, whether it be it changed their life totally, like me, to it just entertained me. And I know the songs. I like Dancing to the Time Warp. I like all the other songs. Again, I love all the music in this science fiction double feature. One of the greatest songs ever written for a movie. I know people, I only know one person who hates this movie, and they even like that song. But I think this movie stands the test of time, not only as a cult film, but because it has impacted so many lives. Not surprising, it's in my top five. Coming in at number three, Good Will Hunting, 1997. Already tearing up. Directed by Gus Van Sant, starring Robin Williams, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and Stellan Skarsgård. And Minnie Driver. First of all, that cast, phenomenal. We all know the story. Matt and Ben were starving artists, wrote a script. I believe it was an action film when it first came out, and somebody said you should strip it down and make it a drama. After a couple attempts at getting Oscar nominations, he got some. It was this movie that gave Robin Williams his Oscar win, and so deservedly. And Matt and Ben became big stars and wound up with Oscars themselves for the screenplay. Good Will Hunting changed my life. Another of the five times in theaters movies. I absolutely adored this film. I still do. I still watch it maybe every 2 years. It's actually got even more meaning to me now. Because I always identified with the Matt Damon character. The scene where Robin Williams tells him it's not his fault and he keeps telling him until Will Hunting gets infuriated with him. It's probably one of my favorite scenes because I can relate to Will Hunting. And now as I got older and I have found a relationship with a young man, I remember when I showed this movie to him, we instantly realized that it was us. And I realized that now this movie meant even more to me, because now I related to the Robin Williams character as an older man. And any movie that can make you watch it one way when you're younger and then watch it another way and still feel that impact has to be one of the best movies of all time. I love sharing this movie with people, and most people I've shared it with absolutely adore it. And just talking about it, I'm crying my eyes out, and it makes me want to go out and just go put it on. It's that impactful to me. Number two, Grease, 1978, directed by Randall Kleiser, starring John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John, Stucker Channing, and Jeff Conaway. Losing my voice here. I'm drinking water, but I'm loving talking about movies, but I'm going to rest my voice after this podcast is done. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a big Olivia Newton-John fan. What some of you might not know is that I loved Olivia Newton-John in Grease. She's my favorite part of it, even though I love John Travolta and Stocker Channing and all the cast. This is a feel-good film. I wasn't brought up in the 50s, but as I said, it captures the time immensely. Another great musical that was superior to the Broadway musical because of all the music added, mostly by John Farah, songs like You're the One That I Want, Hopelessly Devoted to You, the song Grease, Sandy, just a ton of songs that were added to the movie version that they eventually had to put into the Broadway version because people knew this movie so well. I remember the summer of this, I just kept going to the theaters. I drove my parents and my family crazy listening to the soundtrack. I was obsessed with Grease. I'm one of the few people who actually like Grease 2. Of course, it's nowhere as great as Grease. You didn't hear Grease 2 in my top 50. But I really love Grease. But what I was saying is I actually became a big Olivia Newton-John fan after Xanadu. After she had her 1-2 hit, I loved Olivia Newton-John. But when Xanadu hit, I knew she was something even more than just a singer I liked. She would become my diva and stuff. I think Grease is just a great feel-good film. I know people of all ages who love it. even if you're not a big musical fan, I know people who will still be singing along with Grease Lightning or Look at Me, I'm Sandra Dee. It's just a phenomenal movie. It holds up. You can show it to kids. And even though there is some subplots that are a little racier, it kind of goes over their heads. And then when they're older, they're like, oh, that's what they're talking about. But Grease is just a feel-good movie. And it is my number two movie, which leaves only one left. And I decided to give it to the original of this trilogy, just because this is the movie that started my love affair with movies. And my number one movie is Star Wars. 1977, directed by George Lucas, starring Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Alec Guinness. I know it's now called Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, but back in 1977, it was Star Wars. I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again because it basically tells you my love affair with movies. My father was a lot older when he had me. He was in his 40s when I was born, so he was in his 50s when we saw Star Wars. And we used to have a tradition of going to the movies every Sunday, and it was a great time. My brothers really didn't have that. He wasn't the throw the ball around. He was a military man. My brothers, he traveled a lot with my brothers. So when I got him, this would be our thing. We'd only stick to Disney movies, you know, the live actions, the animated, you know, any kids movie. But when Star Wars came out, I needed to see it. My brother Paul had seen it. My dad asked him, could he see it? And Paul said, yeah, he'd be fine. When I went from seeing Snow White, and I love Snow White, don't get me wrong, or, you know, Lady and the Tramp, and I went to see a movie where I basically saw a spaceship coming over my head, I knew I was instantly in love. I fell in love with all the heroes, Luke Skywalker, R2-D2, Han Solo, Princess Leia. Darth Vader creeped me out. He was a real villain. He scared me. I was terrified. And this movie opened my eyes to a whole world of movies. After we saw Star Wars, we started going to see PG movies. We started seeing movies like Saturday Night Fever and Grease and just anything we could get our hands on. And my dad always taught me that you could always find good things even in the worst movies. And I love that he taught me that, due to the fact that it basically shaped who I am. With each passing decade of movies, I pick up more and more, and I may love other movies better than others. But Star Wars was the one who opened my eyes to all of this, and that's why I have always said Star Wars is my favorite movie. In reality, I think Empire and Jedi are both better crafted films, but Star Wars started an obsession. Not only just my love of movies, but my love of telling stories, my love of the underdog hero. There's so much in this movie. Every image of it is so iconic, and it just blows my mind. I also think it's such a powerful movie because of how many people went into the film industry because of it, whether you wanted to be an actor or a director, but even people wanted to do special effects or sound. This movie is a groundbreaker, and I had no trouble making this my best movie, because it opened up my love affair. My tastes have changed over the years. And I like that when I alter this top 50, it's going to be of my whole life. The movies that were made before I was born, and movies that, you know, in a couple years, I won't even know that I've fallen in love with. But when I look at these are movies that impacted my life. It's not easy doing a top 50, and yeah, there are movies I can say, well, that technically should have been in the top 10 or should have been in the top 50. I see movies that should have been in my top 50. But because I continue to see movies, I have to expect that there's going to be stuff popping in that's going to knock things down. But the truth of the matter is, I love that I've fallen in love with movies, and I'm back on a high with movies. Whether it's the cinematic blockbuster, or it's that darling indie flick, or maybe even that cult classic that nobody shares some love for, or that hidden crap box that I don't know why I love it, but I do. I love that this top 50 has a little bit of that in it, and I hope you got to see a little bit of my soul. As always, don't forget to comment. I would love to hear what you think. Try not to be too nasty. These are movies I love, but, you know, do you agree with some of these choices? What are your top five favorite films? I'd love to know. To me, this was a great adventure, and I thank Damien Troutman for putting me on this adventure. It seemed like an impossible job, but when I got it done, it really made me love movies even more. And there were times I wouldn't want to admit that I liked Xanadu or Batman Forever. Now I say it proudly. They are movies that impacted my life. Thank you. I hope you stayed with me. I hope you search out some of these films that you haven't seen. I hope you rewatch some of these films that you haven't seen in a while. Thank you for taking this trip with me. I can't begin to tell you how awesome it is knowing that you press played and stayed for the whole 50 countdown. It means so much to me. Anyhow, I love you all, and you take care, and I'll be back for another podcast very, very soon.